It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here joined by one of my grandchildren, Mr. Soccer, we call him. They're headed out after the game to hopefully score another victory, because that's what they do best.
Hope so.
Yep. And there's lots to talk about, I guess you'd have to say.
No doubt about it.
It seems like every week there's more to say than there was the week before, and it's never ending.
It's definitely been an interesting year, and it's only a quarter over.
Yep. And I think we could spend a month just on all the lies we're being spoon-fed, but that's too negative. So we'll just talk about better things instead. And we have a few of those. Anyway, for all you regulars, thanks for always being there. You're the reason we get up and do this every Saturday. And we do it every Saturday, having missed exactly four shows in 7 years plus, two to hurricanes and two to holidays. And other than that, we're always here, so you know where to find us. And if you're just new to the show by accident or on purpose, left your radio on there, or somebody told you to listen, or we demanded that you listen, or any of those things, then stick around for the hour. We always promise that you will take something away. Can't always tell you it'll be worth a fortune, but you'll learn something, even if it's only interesting. And we will talk all day, all hour, about what we want to talk about, unless you like to change the subject, which is very simple. Pick up the phone, dial 904-222-8255. That's 222-TALK. And we will get the call, and you will be put on the air virtually immediately. Callers always take precedence in this show. Before we have too much fun, I will say that it looked for a moment like this week was going to go to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, well, the whole week was just choppy, choppy, choppy. The trading was volatile. We saw gains for the first few days, and then the next 2 days was down. One day, the last half hour dropped 300 or 400 points on, I think, Thursday.
Yeah, and a lot of that is people like mutual funds that are revamping for the quarter so they can post some numbers.
End of the quarter, so that is not unusual. But then Friday, the futures were up. And then the market was down, and then it was up, and then it was down, and then ended up right at the last minute. It jumped 100 points and turned into a decent week. Yeah. The Dow was off just slightly, 0.1%, but the NASDAQ turned in a decent week at 0.7% up, and the S&P was just slightly positive at 0.1% up. So just kind of a blah week, but not terrible.
No. Compared to the first couple of months, starting on the 4th of January, a blah week with a green ending is just fine with me.
Yeah, March wrapped up pretty nicely, actually. The quarter one officially ended on Thursday night, and it wasn't good, but it could have been a lot worse because March really bailed out the quarter to some degree. The Dow actually gained 2.3%. The NASDAQ was up 3.3%, and the S&P was up 3.5% in March. So that really rescued the quarter to a degree. Year to date, all three indexes are still negative, and the biggest losses coming from growth areas like technology, causing the NASDAQ to sink 8.8% year to date. But it was down 20, so that's a heck of a lot better than it could have been. The S&P helped out by the energy industry. That was up almost 40% in the first quarter alone. That's thanks to skyrocketing oil prices. So the S&P was down just 4.6%. Again, not as terrible as it could have been. We were in a correction, which was down 10%. So, again, it could have been a lot worse. Large cap Dow was down 4.2%. Investors, to some degree, sought the safety of large-cap value stocks in this volatile market, so that's why the Dow outperformed, in my opinion. Overall, it was a bad quarter for equities, but it was actually a worst quarter for bonds.
Yep.
It was pretty awful. Hard to believe, but if you are in a 60-40 portfolio right now, the 40 is probably dragging you down more than the 60. And that's not how that's supposed to work. That's supposed to be the sort of stability in your portfolio. So you really need to be tactical. And we've been saying this for months now, but you really need to be tactical with the bond side of your portfolio right now. For instance, if you hold TLT, that's a long treasury fund, it was down over 10% in the first quarter. Ouch. Yep. I mean, that's worse than even the NASDAQ.
Yeah, next time somebody tells you they're fleeing the equities for the safety and security of bonds,
yeah,
once you're done laughing, tell them to call the show.
Correct. However, if you look at SHV, it's a short-term treasury fund, it was down just a few basis points. But then again, if you're looking for yield, SHV yields just 2 basis points, while TLT yields 1.7. Now, getting 1.7% on a loss of 10% is still not a good trade-off. But
make it up in volume.
Yeah, but you're not going to make back the 0.17 basis points you dropped in SHV with a yield of 2 basis points. So in short, there's just no real good trade-off in the bond market right now. It's tough to find.
Yet. When the Fed goes to a neutral stance, we'll revamp the whole thing.
Absolutely. Well, even in advance of that, I think, is when it'll happen.
When it gets up, so it's fairly obvious we're reaching the peak. You want to sneak in the door a little ahead of everybody else.
Yeah, which is tough to do because you just never know when it's going to happen. But so sticking with bonds, I have to do this. I'm not really excited about doing it, but we have to talk about the yield curve.
You didn't read this morning where they said if you don't want to talk about it, skip the middle of the report.
No, I'm already tired of hearing about it. It's all that you can hear on the business channels right now. If you don't know what the yield curve is, you need to figure it out. I'll do my best to explain it to you. It's a graph. It shows treasury yields or what you get paid to own those treasuries on the y-axis. So the y-axis is a percentage, and then the x-axis is the time to maturity. So on the left side of the yield curve is really, really short duration, 3 months or less. On the very, very right side is 30-year plus. And so as you move along that yield curve, the yield is supposed to go up, and because that is a function of risk, if you hold a 30-year note, there's a lot more chance of default in 30 years than there is in 3 months, so therefore you get compensated for the additional time value of money / risk.
Were you involved in this kind of thing back in the 90s when they stopped issuing 30-year bonds?
Yes. Okay. I was in business school, actually, and we talked about it at length back then. So
yeah, with a balanced budget, which was kind of smoke and mirrors, but still they didn't need to pay the extra premium for the 30 years. So
right,
they took it down to most of what was going on was in the 10-year range.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so I want to talk a little bit more about what happened with the yield curve, right? But right now we're up against a break, so I will do that on the other side of the commercials.
And of course, the other big news of the week, whenever a jobs report comes out, there's a lot to dissect. And this one was certainly a little bit different than what we're used to, and we'll explain that when we get back to. And then I've got a whole bunch of other fun things to talk about. Those of you who remember Peter Lynch, I've got a great story about Peter Lynch. You got to go back for a while there. That was in the 70s when he was running the Fidelity Magellan Fund, and everybody was getting rich, including Peter Lynch. And he had an observation that to this day is one of the smartest things I have ever read. So how's that for interesting? Anyway, we're going to go pay some bills. We won't be long. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are just getting into the fun part right now. But first, we have a trivia question, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can reach Ken at 904-636-7888. Residential or business, either way. We're going to talk about April, since it's here. First, it's Financial Literacy Month, which is, to me, a wonderful thing. I think we need 11 more financial literacy months, but I digress. April is generally a very good month for stocks, and there are a couple reasons for that. Taxes are due in some cases, but that also means that there's a whole bunch of people contributing to IRAs and 401ks and so on, and that some of that money goes into the market, so it creates a little demand blip. But I think it's also the weather and everything else that impacts April, because people are feeling pretty good. Since 1983, what percentage of the time is April positive in the market? Just a whole number percentage. And that takes us back to jobs and other things.
Yield curves, yeah.
Yield curve, right.
So the yield curve normally looks like a corporate profits chart, or if you think about even the famous global warming hockey stick chart, where on the left side it's very, very small, and then gradually, and then on the right side it shoots up. Yeah.
Which is always in the future, of course.
Yeah. And so that part that shoots up is in the future on the yield curve as well. The problem is, the yield curve moves, and it moves a lot. And recently it's moved a whole lot.
Yeah.
As interest rates rise and bond prices adjust and bond yields adjust to that changing interest rates, the yield curve generally moves up. And it can move up as a whole, or it can move up in just certain parts. And that is a lot of times based on what investors think is going to happen in the near term and in the longer term. So the problem that we run into is that occasionally prices or yields on the short end of the curve get higher than yields on the long end of the curve. And that's called an inversion. And what that's saying is that investors are preferring to buy short-term yielding bonds rather than long-term bonds, because they feel, for whatever reason, that they are a better deal. And when the 2-year yield gets higher than the 10-year yield, it is widely considered a recession warning. And it's actually a fairly good indicator that a recession is coming. In fact, according to Bespoke Research, there is a 98% of a recession within 2 years when the 2-year yield is higher than the 10-year yield. Now, there are some caveats around that. Not every time the yield curve has inverted has a recession followed. But every time we've had a recession, the yield curve has inverted within 2 years prior. So it's not 100% accurate, but it's pretty close. And this one, the inversion was extremely brief. And some people think that it has to stay there, and other parts of the curve must also invert for this to be a meaningful indicator. And so I'm not sure what to make of this yet, although it doesn't sound implausible that we could have a recession within the next 2 years. So
it won't be caused by a yield curve.
No, it is definitely not caused by that.
But it's reflective of the conditions that are perceived in the market. And it is certainly within the realm of possibility, with the stupidity that goes on in D.C., that we could slide into recession.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Perhaps even sooner than 2 years.
Yeah, but the other thing about that warning sign and a recession is that stocks tend to do extremely well headed into a recession. So if you sell now based on the yield curve inversion, you could miss a really nice run up in stocks, and we may not even see the recession or the pullback. So
only know when it's gone.
What this just goes back to is timing the market is impossible. And it is a fool's errand. Do not do it.
And that is why I'm going to talk about Peter Lynch, probably in the next segment.
So, but first, I think we should talk about something more fun, like jobs.
We should.
Friday, there was a jobs report. Unusual to see it on the very first day of the month, but
yeah,
that's what happened.
Yeah, they usually postpone to the next week, although they've got the data. I mentioned to Adam, the data comes from the middle of the month before, not the end of the month before.
It was a solid report. 431,000 jobs created during the month, and previous month's reports were revised up by 95,000. So that brought the total well over 500,000 new jobs, and the unemployment rate dropped to 3.6%. If you're wondering how many people have not returned to work since COVID hit, that number is right around 4 million, which seems extremely high to those of us living in Florida and not under any COVID restrictions.
The difference today between the economy having reached its potential and what's actually
for
happening.
Sure. I would guess about 90% of those 4 million live in California, just to guess.
I would have to think.
Yeah. This is also a reason that wages continue to soar, because companies can't find enough employees. So when you have 4 million people just not in the workforce, that makes a big difference about the applicant pool that you're going to get for open jobs. And that is causing, that is adding to the inflation problems that we are seeing. So California, open up.
Yeah. Well, there's proof too that people are going to not look for work. And you can see it in the U6 number, that what we report as 3.6% is called U3. But when you add in discouraged people who have tried to get the tried to get work, couldn't, dropped out, that's U6, which is the way we always used to do this. Anyway, that is down to 6.9, which is almost lower than it was pre.
One tenth of a percent away from.
So we're talking about 4 million estranged people who just don't have any intent of lifting a finger.
I don't think these people are going back to work. If the higher wages and the open jobs aren't enticing them back in, they must be holding out for management positions or like Cousin Eddie.
Yeah, exactly. Couple more things. The ADP report, which came out Wednesday, that's the private payrolls report, that was sort of a confirming number at about 455,000. And that's fine. It is probably the single month in the last, well, in all the time we've been doing the show, probably the single month where the jobs reports tended to confirm and support each other.
Well, there are other times that they have done that, but these two were spot on. That's very unusual.
Absolutely true. Now, another thing I wanted to look at, which is a little interesting to me, it wasn't a fun quarter, and we all know that. But we remind clients all the time that the fourth quarter of last year was pretty darn good. In fact, it was really darn good. So I went back and said, well, if we had a government fiscal year that started September 1, the first half of that fiscal year would look okay. The Dow for the first 6 months of that supposed fiscal year is up 2.47%, and the S&P is up 5.17%. NASDAQ is off about 1.5%. But if you look at that six-month period, if you've been an investor during that whole time, you're okay.
Yeah.
Not great, but considering what we came off of, you're doing pretty well, I think. All right. You got anything else you want to finish up, or should I talk about Peter?
Just two small things.
Okay.
There was some good news out of the manufacturing sector. The PMI report shows showed strong growth, 58.8. Anything above 50 is expansion. So that's healthy growth in that sector. But the best thing in the report was that many manufacturers mentioned that they are showing fewer bottlenecks, right, as supply chain issues get worked out. So that's very encouraging. And then the other thing I just wanted to mention was that despite jobs being plentiful and businesses are showing pretty strong sales, consumer sentiment is plummeting,
mm-hmm,
like plummeting to the levels of the 2008 Great Recession.
Mm-hmm.
It's 100% related to inflation. People are struggling with rising costs on everything. It's really bad.
Call Vladimir. Complain.
Yeah. Okay. so there is a lot going on that's causing that. I don't put it all on one person,
no,
but he is not helping. And it's really going to be an issue going forward. And I think it has a lot to do with why the yield curve inverted. So,
yeah. One other thing I glossed over too, the household survey done by the BLS, just as the establishment survey is done, it was up 736,000. What that does, it picks up gig workers and it picks up self-employed people who are starting a little business or doing a contract or something. That bodes well for employment over the next month then. And I think all in all, we're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, if we could just get costs to stop going up at 9% a year, that would be in good shape.
Yeah, real wages are falling.
Yep, it's unfortunate because wages are growing at somewhere between 5 and 7% a year. And you still have less money than you did last year inflation.
As I pointed out to someone yesterday, when you look at wages going up, you're talking about pre-tax money.
That's right.
Because taxes are taken out of there. When you're talking about the things getting more expensive, most things are purchased with post-tax money.
Almost everything.
So that gap in there is even bigger than the numbers would suggest. So we got to do something on each side of that. Mm-hmm. Wages have to rise further, which, of course, is inflationary in itself. And we've got to get the rate of inflation down because we can't sustain this or people are going to be priced out of everything. And, of course, that has repercussions in the world of old crime fighting and things like that. It also has repercussions on the 70% consumer-driven economy where people, if they're not feeling good, they're not going to spend much money. All right, back at it in a minute. One more little break, and we will see you then. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And our trivia question is open, and it is about April. April is usually a pretty good month in the market. Since 1983, what percentage of the time has April closed positive? Lines are open, 904-222-8255, and I will tell you, if you call in today, don't be surprised if the voice that answers is male. Jeremy's on the board today. Before the show ends, I hope to remember to teach him the rules. Got to break in all the new producers with the rules. So that'll come later. Peter Lynch, if you were in the market in the 80s, you knew who Peter Lynch was. The hottest mutual fund anywhere was Fidelity Magellan. Mm-hmm. A lot of people just buy in it and keep reinvesting the dividends and get bigger and bigger and bigger. And it just kept giving. There's a little more background I want to give. But first, good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
How you doing?
Hanging in there.
Good.
Reading a book about the Great Reset. Coming down the pipe in this country and this world. Mm-hmm. And I'll leave the politics out, but it's interesting about how they're going to try to do more control, the powers to be, with digital currency.
Yep, and I've got article after article on it, and every time I write anything about it, it winds up the same on the bottom. Be afraid, yeah. America. Be very afraid.
Be very afraid, and if anybody doesn't believe this, look what happened with those protesting truck drivers in Canada.
Yep.
How did they get back at them? They seized their assets.
Yep. And by the way, if you think it's really safe out there in the crypto world, why did somebody just rip off 6 million plus of someone's crypto account? This
correct.
Is not safety in my book, people. So if you're thinking about that or tax dodging on crypto, think twice.
Very true. I'll take a quick stab at
sure.
your... I'm going to say for April, since 1983, 1.5% positive.
One and a half.
Average.
No,
well,
the number of times, not the amount.
Oh,
you're a little bit...
How many times?
Your question is pretty close, but that's not the... I'll give you a shot to answer the question as it's written, which is what percentage of the time is April positive?
Okay. In that case, then I'm going to say, 82%.
That is a wonderful guess. It is just too high. But you get the gist of it, which April's a good month, right?
It is a good month. And then it's the old adage, go away in May.
Yeah, that has not been good advice the last couple of years.
No, it's actually been really bad.
Yeah, in the post-Trump or in the Trump era and beyond, it has been terrible advice, and I would suggest nobody take it.
Very true. All right, let me go back and enjoy your great show, like always. Have a great weekend.
Thanks so much. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call. All right, Peter Lynch was a mutual fund manager, but he was more than that. He was really a student of the economy and of people. And one of his great stories involves his wife. His wife did a lot of shopping, apparently. You can do that when you're married to a guy like Peter Lynch.
I'm sure money wasn't the primary concern.
No. But he would always ask her what she found that she liked, and then he'd find out who made it and so on. Well, one day she came home with this plastic egg, and...
Oh, I remember the story. Yeah.
And popped it open, and inside is pantyhose. So he started quizzing her about it, And he said, I want to know how you like them. It was in a kiosk, a point of purchase type sale, which caught her attention, and she got it. But he wanted to know more than that. That's A plus for the marketing. Now, what about the product? And she loved them, mm-hmm. absolutely loved them. So he found out they're made by Hanes. So he went to the Hanes people and said, I want to help you with this. So, you know, they chatted for a while, and he wound up using Fidelity Magellan money, building them a factory to make these pantyhose and containers. And it became very successful. He had a lot of stories like that, and that's why he's so successful. But back in, he retired, I don't know, early 90s maybe. He was giving a speech back on October 7th, 1994. I'm going to read you a couple of lines. He says, some event will come out of left field and the market will go down or the market will go up. Volatility will occur. Markets will continue to have these ups and downs, but basic corporate profits have grown about 8% a year historically. So profits doubling 8% a year or so mean about 9 years, and the stock market ought to track corporate profit increases. So the market was about 3,800 that day. And he said, that I'm convinced that the next 3,800 points will be up, not down. But the next 500 or 600 point move, I have no idea which direction it's going to go. But if you take time and chunks of 9 years and keep going, it's rather amazing how accurate he was. So if you go back to that day and bring it forward to right now, that formula would predict a Dow at 32,700. Where is it? 34,700?
Pretty darn close.
Not bad.
Nope.
The S&P, that formula predicted 3,925. Where is it? About 4,500.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad. Did a little better than would expect. But here's the killer. NASDAQ, it predicted a 750 NASDAQ, or predicted, excuse me, from 750 to a 6,470 NASDAQ. It's 14,000 and change.
Two things going on there. Innovation and growth. And then multiples on tech companies are higher than what they were on traditional companies.
There's even a bigger factor. In the 90s, the tech companies weren't making any money.
That's true.
And they weren't evaluated on their ability to make money.
Yeah.
Remember, they were counting website hits, and that's how the companies were getting evaluated by the mm-hmm. number of people on the website. So I thought that was very interesting. It's so logical, and if there's one lesson take away from that, it's very simple. Get in, stay in, be smart about it, but let time work its miracles in the market, because you're really betting on corporate business acumen and finance and all that stuff.
I wonder what they're good. If you had just plugged in 9% instead of 8%, I bet they were spot on.
Well, his estimate, I think they have that in here. A 7%, remember, we're talking about going up to right now, the Dow closed Friday at 34.8, that was Friday before, I think, which is pretty close. A 7% growth rate would have gotten you to 24.4.
Mm-hmm.
But a 9% growth rate would have been 40,600.
Oh, okay, so about closer to 8.
But I'll make a counter argument. If Trump had gotten reelected and had been in there the last couple of years, we'd be at 40,000. I can't prove that, but you can't disprove me either.
That is true.
How about that? All right, all you 1950 babies, actually after June 30th, 1949, there is an update. You know how closely we've been following the Secure Act 2.0, partly because it's personal to me and partly because it's very interesting. If you look back at the Secure and the CARES Act, go back a ways. This is all reactionary to the COVID virus stuff. And this week in the House of Representatives, there was a scheduled vote for a Secure 2.0 on Tuesday. Much to my surprise, it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't insignificant. 414 to 5 in the House of Representatives. Now, that does not happen these days.
No.
This whole concept was introduced on a bipartisan basis. It's supported on that.
Why is the administration not touting that?
I cannot
imagine. That makes no sense. I have heard nothing about it except what I've seeked out to read about.
Joe Biden has been in need, if you're a Biden supporter, he's been in need of a victory.
No doubt.
About as long as I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
He had one available that he blew by waiting through a whole summer to pass anything. And then, of course, nothing happened. But this one, this is good for everybody. And even if you don't realize it's good for you, I'm going to come back in after the break, and we're going to talk about all the differences that are in there. A lot of them are small. Nobody's affected by all of them. It's just good news for the American worker and the American saver. And I want to bring that up. And I'm not giving credit to anybody for it because it's just a multiple. We'll be right back. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
Lines are open, 904-222-8255. What percentage of the time since 1983 has April been positive in the market? And we know that 82% is high. Now, Jeremy, there's a little training session that I always have when new producers come online. Lauren's had hers. I got to tell you about this one. If the show goes absolutely perfectly smooth, everything clicks, 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 there's no unusual gaps or anything like that, the host takes all the credit. But if anything goes wrong and it sounds disjointed or bad in any way, shape, or form, the producer gets all the blame. Now he's fully trained. I got a thumbs up on that one. All right, Secure. Let's go back a little bit. It's really hard to find something about 2020 that was memorable or fun in any way, shape, or form. But a couple of things did come out of it. One was the CARES Act, and one was the Secure Act, which is now called Secure 1.0. One of the things it did was suspended all the required minimum distributions for a year in 2020. Unfortunately, they did come back 2021, but what do you really expect? That it gave us all 1 year of reprieve. But then another thing happened. We've been dealing with this just ridiculous age 70 and a half thing. All of you who've been in the market at all, IRAs or anything, knew that the required minimum distribution trigger age was 70 and a half. It never made sense to anybody I knew. Well, they raised it to 72 even. Thank you very much for two reasons. It's a lot simpler.
Mm-hmm.
Three reasons. It treats everybody born in that year the same, so
right.
I'll give them that one. But it also hit people who were born after June 30th, 1949. And I'm one of our many 1950 birth year clients in the company. And all those people, some of them take the money anyway. About 80% of people who are subject to RMDs, if they could take a year off, wouldn't anyway. They use it to live on. That's fine. But there's another segment of those people who really don't want to take the extra money and they don't want to pay the extra taxes. Well, they got a reprieve. So technically, this is the year that our required age hits. We're turning 72. But the Secure 2.0, assuming it passes the Senate now, and the president will sign it in, of course, because it's overwhelmingly popular, then that age would rise to 73. 5 years later, it would be 74, and 5 years after that, it would be 75. So what would happen is that we would get a reprieve for another year. We got it through the House, but our reprieve is ongoing. I got to tell you a little bit about that, too, but first I wanted to compare some of the things that happened with CARES and Secure that are good for everybody. One, it repealed age limits for traditional IRA contributions. There was always an age at 70 and a half you could no longer contribute. I don't care if you're working or not. Well, there no longer is an age where you can't contribute. That has not changed in Secure 2.0. Secure 1.0 raised the RMD age, as I said, to 72, and the 2.0 does the ones I just described for 73, 4, and 5. Secure One repealed and replaced stretch IRAs for non-qualified beneficiaries. They replaced it with a 10-year complete liquidation rule. So it used to be when you inherited an IRA, you could put that, you could take the money out over your entire life expectancy. They traded that, and it became, in Secure One, 10 years where you had to take it all by the end of 10 years, but you didn't have to take anything in the interim. Now, that's been changed, too, and that's another story. But that hopefully will be changed. I don't believe they're going to address it, though. Secure One also included smaller required minimum distributions for everybody. That was done by changing the life expectancy table. But Congress, in its infinite wisdom, put it out too late to take effect that year. So it actually took effect last year, and now it is in effect. So they're acknowledging that people are living longer, so you have to take a little less out every year. That's a good thing for everybody. Secure 2.0 also is enhanced catch-up contributions allowed into retirement plans for people who are aged 62, 63, and 64 only. But they are now allowed some additional catch-up contributions. I'm sure the concept there is they're getting ready to retire. 2.0 also has many, many smaller changes that will not impact too many people, but a lot of people are impacted by one of them a little bit. But all in all, Secure made it better. Secure 2.0 is making it much better yet. So what I care the most about is trying to get the interest of your senators and so on to say, look, this thing is so wildly popular, not just in the halls of Congress, but it's popular among the people, and therefore, let's get it done. So if you get a chance to contact a senator, tell them you want it off of the dead pile and onto the floor, and let's get a vote for it. I love it, and I could love it more. But one of the catches is what you have a required beginning age, but you also have a required beginning date. Your required beginning date is March 31 after the year you turn 72 or 73 or whatever it is you're turning. I don't have a name on this. We've got a caller, but I don't know who it is. Good morning. Please tell us who's calling.
Good morning. This is Leroy.
Hey, Leroy. How are you?
Hey, I wanted to give a stab at your trivia at 73%.
Of course. How much?
73%.
Ding, 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 ding. It's actually 74%, and I have a plus or minus one on it. And that makes you the winner.
Hey, thank you very much.
Did a little better this week than last week, right?
Yeah, I kind of flubbed last week by 1%. I got in there at this time.
Well, I'm glad you got it. We'll find you.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Leroy. Have a good one.
All right, bye.
It's not bad, though. Think about 3/4 of the time April's positive. That's a real uplifter, I think. Anyway, your required beginning date is the year after you turn the age that triggers it. Now, why is this important? Because the way this law is written, we would have to take our required minimums this year if you didn't know that our required minimum date is actually next year. So it looks like if you just read the prose in the law that we don't get the benefit of that extra year, but we do, and it's on that technicality that the required beginning date is actually the year after. So if anybody was confused about that, if you were born after June 30th, 1949, you will be impacted by this, and the second it's turned into law, we will have another year. In other words, don't take your required minimums yet unless you absolutely have to if you're in our age group. Pretty cool, huh? Now, another, my last minute little things. You've probably heard that we're releasing oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. This is an absolute world-changing event, isn't it? I'll take that as a no. They were talking about it on the 5 this week, and Geraldo and his usual lunacy says, well, we got over $1 billion in the government one, and there's $2 billion more in the private one. No, Geraldo. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve is four bunkers along the coast of Louisiana and Texas. Why there? Where do you think the refineries are? They're there. So what's it for? Well, what's the word strategic mean to you? It means that in the event, for instance, we were to go to war or whatever, you know, a topic that's coming up more and more recently, that we would not be at the mercy. Yeah, at the mercy of these people. So it's authorized at 726 million barrels, and there's only about 580 million in it right now because of the prior distributions. Well, if we take out another 180 right now, that's another quarter of it gone, and we're down to dangerously low levels at that point. Not only that, the average cost of a barrel in there is about $27.90, and we're going to replace it with, what, 110?
Yeah.
As soon as this thing's over, which, incidentally, bumps up right about at the election, strangely enough. But as soon as that happens, we're going to spend an additional $13 billion for this stupid thing that Biden is doing right now. And that's all I've got to say about that because, you know, the time is about up. I hope you got something out of today. Congratulations, Leroy. We will be back here at the same time next week. So join us then. This is the Benly Financial Hour.